Rising Time on RTE Radio 1 with Shea Byrne.
A very good morning to you. It's Tuesday, the 10th of February. Shea Byrne here until 7. Melody Gardot. And that song is called Baby, I'm a Fool. A very good morning to you. We started with Luca Bloom and a gorgeous, gorgeous song called Give You Wings. And heading for 21 minutes to 6 o'clock here on Rising Time. A very good morning to you. I hope you're well. Cold weather yesterday, but not too bad. It wasn't, you know, no wind. No, as I say to the kids when they're... no wind. There's no rain. It's just a bit cold. Just put on your scarf and get out. Get out! And play football outside. That's the plan. Now, weather forecast for today. It'll be another...
Morning, it's 7 o'clock on Tuesday the 10th of February on RT Radio 1. This is Morning Ireland with Cathal McQuillia and Rachel English.
A Labour TD breaks ranks on a bill many in her party back in principle, and Paul Murphy's arrest at dawn. Claire Daly and Labour Minister Kevin Humphreys talk to us. Plus, a water protest against Fingal councillors. Martin McGuinness is warned of a threat to kill him, and Carib Gas, Thaise Tacht.
The news headlines. The Dáil will vote later today on a bill to allow for terminations in cases involving fatal fetal abnormalities.
You know, people think that somehow abortion is going to take away all the problems, take away all the grief.
Yeah, I'm not asking you what do you think this is good or bad. What I'm asking is, do you believe that your view, well, what I think is your view, of that a pregnancy should be certainly personally proceeded with, that others should be compelled to go by your view, and that other parents who have decided on the medical advice they get, this pregnancy should end now. There is no point in continuing. Do you want? Can I finish the question?
Yeah.
Do you want your view forced on those parents?
What I would like parents to be given is truthful information, and what is missing in this whole discussion is what is that other solution? You're looking at a beautiful solution of perinatal hospice model of care.
Do you mind if I repeat? We have a limited amount of time.
Yes.
Do you mind if I repeat the question one more time to see if you would like to answer it? Do you believe your view of that a pregnancy should be continued with in the face of medical information about a very severe and life-threatening or perhaps a
like
condition...
Like my own child.
Claire Daly... excuse me. Do you believe your view should prevail on parents who decided, no, we want to end this pregnancy now? Should your view be forced on those parents by the state?
I feel that every compassionate, progressive society needs to set a 20-week abortion.
Spent a lot of emotion getting here. Been a bit of a rock and roll ride, but it's great. It's worked out. Our initial estimates suggest that these two wells together could flow at something like 40 to 50% of the Irish gas requirement.
People here are frightened, you know. They don't the scale of this thing that's going to come into this area.
There have been differing views about the Corrib project in County Mayo since gas was first confirmed off the west coast in the mid-1990s.
It's wrong for the locality because it threatens our health and safety. It's wrong for the country.
I think this is a very positive project for Ireland, for Erris and for Mayo. And I've been convinced of that for quite some years now.
Now, almost two decades after Enterprise Energy began work on the offshore field, gas is due to start flowing in the coming months. It's another marker on a journey that's cost billions and run a decade over schedule.
Well, it's been a challenging assignment, sometimes more emotionally than technically in some ways, because it's a roller coaster of a project at times.
Michael Carruthers is Shell E&P Ireland's outgoing managing director.
But really at a time when we're into the...
Our
text number is 51551 and you can email John at rte.ie. Over we go to the Ruhr Red Centre in Tallaght now for this week's Operation Transformation Weigh-In in association with Safe Food. Catherine Thomas is ready as usual, and experts Dr. Ciara Kelly, Aoife Hearn and Carl Henry are waiting to impart words of advice. Catherine, who have you got for us this morning?
Good morning, John. Let's bring Alan out first. How are you, sir?
Not too bad, and yourself?
I'm good. How was your week?
Yeah, it's been good, yeah. Hectic, but good.
Hectic in what way?
Getting exercising and doing stuff like that.
And taking to the stage, doing your bit of music?
Yeah, we went doing a bit of music this week, and it was brilliant. It's brilliant to be able to get back doing that sort of stuff. It's something I really enjoy, so it's great to be able to say in a couple of months you can already do it, like.
And you were taking a leaf out of Carl Henry's book. You were becoming a bit of a trainer yourself.
Oh, yeah. With the under-17 soccer local club. I've been with them for the year and a half. But it's amazing, just in a couple of months, like, I wouldn't be able even to walk around that pitch 2 months ago. And now I'm actually walking around with them doing a bit, you know. So it's great. It is good.
Good for you. All right. Are you ready to do this?
Yeah.
Let's not put it off any longer. Up you get onto those scales. All right, Alan, last week you were 25 stone and half a pound. Your target was to lose 3 pounds, and today you weigh 24 stone, 10 pounds. That is a weight loss of 4.5 pounds.
Lovely.
And another piece of misinformation that you were after giving there this morning is you were after saying that there are cases of legally held guns finishing up committing crimes. That has not happened. You give me one case and tell me of where that case happened in Ireland, and you actually cannot do so. And don't give out figures or statistics or make comments unless you can back them up. You cannot back them up. You just quite simply cannot fit in. If you have an answer for that,
yes, I have.
You can name the county,
the High Court.
And if you can name the date. No, don't talk to me about the High Court. No, give me where this crime was committed, because you can't fit in.
In Dublin, 2000, the High Court made a judgment on legally held firearms, and it said, as a result, hundreds had been stolen and diverted to criminals. Unquote. That is the reality. But listen, Michael, on the ground, in my own constituency, I'd be well... Listen, the guards have come to us on the Iraq... Excuse me, I don't want to name the parts of Dublin or Limerick and Cork, but the guards have come to us and have pointed this particular issue out. And can I also say, in relation to gun killings in this country have increased dramatically since 1991. And also, another issue, Michael, that you haven't looked at in relation to rural Ireland, 8.5% of suicides were completed in rural Ireland with the firearm. And the suicides in rural Ireland are 6 times more common in rural areas than in urban areas. So what I'm saying is, having shotguns lying around sheds and houses and where vulnerable teenagers or vulnerable adults are there, that is also a concern of mine. And that's a genuine concern. It's not scaremongering. I have to think of the public safety, and I have to think of trying to stop people getting hurt or injured.
I'm very sorry
to hear a man that I respect with his work to give out information here this morning. The people that are listening to this, and there is hundreds of thousands of them, who are responsible people, people who belong to gun clubs.
I've said that,
they
Michael.
Will be outraged at what you're saying.
No,
here
I said
today.
That.
Okay,
and
we're going to.
Trying to bring in the suicide issue into it is actually disgraceful. Misinformation, ill-informed comment, scaremongering the people. That's what you've done here this morning.
It's also based on research and facts, Michael. That's the way dealers in the Iraq this could
Michael Healy-Ray and Finian McGrath, thank you both for joining us. We'll be talking to former TD Liz McManus about her new book after the break.
And 51551 is our text number. Mary, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
What happened last night, Mary?
We went to A&E with our daughter, and she has an eating disorder. Right. And we were told by our GP to go to A&E because our daughter had lost a considerable amount of weight in a week, and which they were monitoring with a while. And when we went to A&E, we did meet a lovely doctor, I will say that, an absolutely lovely doctor and a lovely nurse. And basically what we were told in A&E, I'm a little nervous now.
Yeah, take your time.
Basically what we were told in A&E was that at the moment our daughter wasn't in need of medical care. Mm-hmm. Now, she is in need of psychiatric care, you know, someone to help her with the anorexia. But they had no plan in place. They said to us that if symptoms got worse, to come back again today or tomorrow. Now, we did meet a psychologist, and he spoke to us, and he spoke to my daughter, and he actually said to us that they didn't really have a plan. She had been in hospital for a while, but he said that would be an option again. But at right now, at the moment, they didn't have a bed there. So we left there last night at 11 o'clock. I have my daughter at home today with me. You know, she's not eating for us at the moment. She's just refusing. She just says she has these vices in her head and that they're driving her mad. And I suppose what we're looking for today to know, is there anybody out there that can help us? Yeah.
And Mary, when did this begin?
Began, I suppose, about 3 years ago.
Was there anybody to blame, or...?
Well, I don't know. I think that's, you know, I mean, it's hard to talk about it too much. You don't want to be seen as if you're slagging anybody off. But I do think the concerts could have happened, and I don't think it would have been as big a problem as was made out to be, you know. It was five concerts. If you looked at the previous year in Croke Park, there had been no concerts there. If you look at since this came in 2007, if they were allowed three concerts every year, that would be at the end of last year, that would be 21 concerts.
Oh, yeah.
And I think with the five Gareth Brooks, it still would have been 21 concerts.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And in 2007, Croke Park had four concerts, and there wasn't a problem. And they had five rugby matches, or five soccer matches, and four rugby matches. So this over intensification, you know, argument, I don't think really stood up to it, you know.
And he said that the reason he wasn't going to do three and not five was that he would disappoint 160,000 people.
Yeah.
Who bought
I think
tickets.
If people would have seen the show, you know, the first three nights, because of what he would have done on the show and because, you know, how spectacular it would have been, it would have been very unfair on the 160,000 people, you know. Yeah. It's a lot of people.
Are you still talking to Gareth?
Yeah, I've seen him a couple of times. I've seen him in concert in Florida recently. And, you know, when they were singing a certain song, where I was sitting, he came over and said, imagine this in Croke Park. And I was just going, geez, that's terrible, you know.
And did you lose money, Peter?
Yeah.
Substantial amount?
Yeah, an awful lot, yeah.
Are you not insured?
You can't get insurance for a concert when you don't have a licence.
Subject to licence?
Yeah, you have to have the licence where you can get the proper insurance.
So that doesn't serve you well then, does it?
No, it doesn't. And hopefully things will, you know, that something like this can never happen. It can't ever happen again, you know. If we were going to go for the Rugby World Cup, or we were going to go for, you know, a big...
And the five players who won't be involved with Kilkenny anymore, David Herity, Tommy Walsh, Brian Hogan, JJ Delaney and Tagier Aidan Fogarty. Did you try to persuade them to change their mind?
I didn't. No, to be fair, I didn't. And I mean, obviously, other great players have retired over the length of time I've been in this position, and I didn't try to persuade those either, because obviously they have agonised long and hard over the decision. You know, it's not a decision they ever wanted to have to come to. They would love to be able to say, I'm going to keep playing, because they all love playing. And they didn't take it lightly, and there's something they would have discussed, obviously, with their families and those close to them. So I don't think I have the right to kind of say, look, there's no way, you're wrong, you shouldn't do this. I wouldn't do that. I'd say, obviously, look, it's your decision, you're very, very clear about it. And I think that has to be respected.
The one that caught a lot of people by surprise would be JJ Delaney. He played in the All-Ireland final. He was quite magnificent, a seismic moment with that famous hook, but he's had such a distinguished career, as indeed had the rest of them, but the fact was that JJ did play in the All-Ireland final this year and made a massive impact throughout the year.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. He did all those things, and I think as well, because it kind of surprised a lot of people, because the other four lads kind of retired very, very close together shortly after the All-Ireland final, whereas JJ didn't say anything for a few weeks, and it was, you know, quite a few weeks later when JJ made the announcement. And obviously, you know, he had been thinking about it. So that's the way, and that caught a lot of people by surprise. And as a result, then, I suppose people were thinking, well, that's the end of the retirements now. There's four gone, and with the rest of them are all playing on, JJ included. But, you know, that's not the way it turned out, and JJ is now retired.
Will you be encouraging Henry Shefflin to stay on? He's still involved with Ballyhale Shamrocks.
Yeah, well, again, I mean, obviously there's much speculation about Henry, and obviously because I suppose people would say he's there for so long, whatever age he is, he is. But again, I mean, the same as I didn't influence any of the other lads one way or the other, I certainly won't be influencing Henry either. Henry's absolute and total focus is now on an Ireland club final with the Shamrocks. We all can see how he played last Saturday. So you can be sure that there's absolutely nothing else in Henry's head right now except an Ireland club medal.
Now, you've had remarkable success as a manager since you took over in 1999. Just looking even at the All-Ireland successes, 10 All-Irelands. How do you retain that interest and motivation for yourself? Because then you have to motivate the players.
We're going to return to that vote in the All-Ireland on Clare Daly's bill on fatal fetal abnormalities. We have the result of the vote. We're returning to Leinster House. Micheál Lehane of our political staff joins me again. Tell us about the result, Micheál.
The vote was defeated, 104 votes against 20 in favour. All eyes, of course, on the Labour Party. But in the end, it was just Anne Ferris who backed Clare Daly's bill. Speculation around it about certain TDs as they walked into the chamber. Michael McNamara, the Clare TD and barrister, looking relaxed, talking to the Chief Whip, Imit Stagg. He ultimately voted with his party, as did Ciara Conway. So there, that leaves just 30 of the Labour TDs who were in the chamber. All but one of the 30 voted with the government. There were four people who weren't there. Ruairí Quinn is abroad. Robert Dowds was in Belfast for work with the Health Committee, and he had permission not to vote. He's just arrived back in Leinster House but missed the vote, but he had permission to do so. The Junior Minister, Kevin Humphreys, was in the Shannon, so he also was unable to vote, but that was all cleared beforehand. So then there's just one person there that you would put the focus on for abstaining, and that would be Dominic Hannigan, who, of course, spoke about this possibility earlier today on radio.
Now, what about, am I right in saying Labour was the only party that had the whip on this?
Well, there would be a government whip on it anyway, but Sinn Féin decided to abstain because they are dealing with this at their party conference or Ardesha in the next few weeks.
So they so all that, abstained. Fianna yeah. Fáil?
Fianna Fáil had a free vote on it, but judging by there was only 20 who voted in favour of it, it looks as if Fianna Fáil voted against it. But there was a free vote in Fianna Fáil.
Were there abstentions?
The four big four abstentions, or the one clearly seems to be Dominic Hannigan, is the standout one. Of the two people who were elected Labour TDs who are no longer there, they are Roisin Shortall and Tommy Bruin. They both voted in favour of it.
Are there any consequences for Dominic Hannigan on that abstention?
I don't know. We're into the situation now where someone goes missing. Perhaps it appears that he may have gone missing and he has to explain that now. Could something be arrived at where he was missing for personal reasons?
We start this evening with Arch News from Alan Corr, and the news, Alan, that the Eurovision Song Contest has invited Australia to join.
Well, it does make perfect sense. Sean Oz is known for his love of High Camp, Kitsch and Kylie. So he's been invited to enter the Eurovision for the first time ever to mark the concept's 60th anniversary show next year. The Eurovision has a pretty rabid following down under, and nearly 3 million Aussies watched it last year. According to The Guardian, the show's organisers, the European Broadcasting Union, described Australia's possible inclusion as a wildcard entry and added that the only way it could return would be if it won. Now, Australian performers are no stranger to the Eurovision Song Contest. Of course, Olivia Newton-John and Gina G both represented the UK in the past, and I'm perfectly happy with this idea, as long as Ruddy Jedwood don't try and sneak in with a naff Australian accent.
And we spoke about the new Irish film Patrick's Day on the programme last Friday. One of the stars of that film, Maud Dunford, has been honoured in Berlin.
Another award for a great movie, the Dungarvan actor who stars as a mentally unstable young man.
Everything Between Us is a black comedy from Northern Irish playwright David Ireland, focusing on the broken relationship between two Belfast sisters. This Rough Magic production is directed by Sophie Motley and features Stacey Gregg and Abigail McGibbon as the two sisters. Evelyn O'Rourke met up with the cast and crew as they walked onto their new set for the very first time at the Project Arts Centre in Dublin.
So we've got three spots to look in through. And look, this is our new friend, Julie. We don't know if she's going to stay in or not. I love her.
The Julie being introduced to the cast here is not a fellow actor, but instead a big blue industrial boiler.
I would like to try and sit on her because it would be a challenge.
It would be a challenge.
And so the excitement continued as the two cast members, Stacey Gregg and Abigail McGibbon, went on exploring their new stage home under the watchful eye of director Sophie Motley.
And this makes some really good noises.
The play is set in a disused boiler room in Stormont, so pipes, hoses and utility panels form the backdrop to the drama.
It does feel a little bit like Christmas.
Stacey Gregg, who plays Teenie, the younger sister in the play, described what it was like to step onto the project set for the very first time.
Because we've been working for 4 weeks just kind of imagining and doing some very bad miming. It's always so lovely to see it physicalised.
But banging metal and pipes aside, what is this play, Everything Between Us, really about? Director Sophie Motley explains.
So it's two sisters. The precursor to the play is the older sister, Sandra, is on her first day of work in Stormont. She's sitting on a panel, part of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. Day one, suddenly into government building storms her estranged sister Teenie, who she hasn't seen for 11 years. Now, bearing in mind the last time she saw her sister threatening her newborn baby with a knife. So it's a fraught. Sandra, the older sister, grabs Teenie by the scruff of her neck and drags her down a lot of corridors to a room where nobody will find them, and the play starts.
David can serve up the rawness that he wants to write about wrapped in a joke.
Abigail McGibbon, who plays the elder sister Sandra, is herself from Belfast, and she believes that the scriptwriter, David Ireland, has managed to write a script that on the one hand explores very sensitive political issues while soaking it unapologetically in black humour.
He doesn't back away, and it's just terribly funny as well. And it's that family thing as well. There are certain things that are too bleak, too black, so you just have to lighten it up a bit.
Here in this excerpt, we get a flavour of the dark humour in the play. At this point in the story, Sandra, the older sister, is trying to establish where Teenie's been for the past 11 years.
They'll think you're a terrorist.
Who will?
The police.
But I'm not a terrorist.
They don't know that.
I'll tell them.
You've committed what amounts to a terrorist attack.
Sandra, if they'd wanted to arrest me, they'd have done it already.
Yeah, well, I told the security guards I would contain the problem.
Oh, did you?
I told them you were my sister.
You must find that hard to believe.
Why?
Well, look at you and look at me.
Kieran is there. Kieran and Angie, they're on the road at the moment. They're resting up in Phoenix, Arizona, having driven from New Orleans through Texas and New Mexico before resuming our trip to LA. Nice work if you can get it. They send best wishes to all the family and friends from sunny Arizona. Safe travelling, you too. Complete contrast, the very next email is from Eamon McGrath, who says, hello from snowy Boston, listening to you online and would love to hear something from Cookie and the Vaudevilles from their debut release, Riches to Rags. I saw them at the Jazz Festival last time I was home and they were brilliant, says Eamon. Thank you, Eamon. And also I want to say hello to Jimmy, who's with us tonight, and enjoying the tunes. That's all great. Okay. Now, for your musical delectation, I'm going to give you two songs. I hope you like these two anyway. There's a chance you mightn't like them at all because they're kind of poppy songs, but they're of a certain era. And one of these was mentioned last night. It's a song I haven't heard in a long, 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 long time, probably since it was a hit. But let's give it a whirl tonight anyway, just to show that we play them all. This was Cock Robin, you remember? The Promise You Made.
Joined on the line now by Jerry Edwards. Jerry, thank you for joining us this evening on the phone. You too have a very personal experience of this issue. Your son Joshua was diagnosed with a fatal fetal abnormality around about this time 13 years ago. What is your reaction to what happened in the Dáil today and indeed what you're hearing this evening?
To be perfectly honest, we were disgusted by what happened in the Dáil today. It's actually 14 years on Thursday since my son was delivered. And listening to contributors, they used the line that doctors cannot tell us that our babies will not live is really, really offensive.
I didn't say that.
The nature of the injury to my son, it was quite clear that he could never live, and that was confirmed to us in three different hospitals in two jurisdictions. We had the Taoiseach in the Dáil when it was raised by Richard Boyd Barrett in December of 2013, start talking about how he wasn't medically qualified to say what was a fatal fetal abnormality and speak about a hole in the heart. Now, I have a daughter who has a hole in the heart, and the limitation on that, the limitation on that is that she may not be able to scuba dive, which is completely different to being incompatible with life. And we invited the Taoiseach to meet with us at that time, and we've had no response from him. In fact, we've had no response from any correspondence that we've had with the Taoiseach. And we
How often have you been in touch with the Taoiseach asking to meet with him?
There have been a couple of pieces of correspondence to him. We certainly wrote at the time afterwards because his comments on the doll really offended an awful lot of people who've been through fetal abnormalities.
And Gerard, just to be clear,
no acknowledgement whatsoever.
No acknowledgement at all from the Taoiseach on that.
None whatsoever.
And your point there, Gerard, I mean, is it that there has been a blurring almost of what is a fetal abnormality and what is a developmental abnormality?
I think there has.
I actually have a lot of sympathy for some of the Gardaí that I've spoken to, because they're put in to mediate a deeply unpopular law that you guys have brought in.
No, they're not. Because
you should talk to the Gardaí then at the front line.
You're talking about different things. Like as Pat says,
why is he talking about different things? Well, there has been an
organised campaign of basically intimidating, the meter installers, politicians, and guards, and that's a different thing to the kind of the mass protest that there was about the water charges.
But it's not unique. I mean, anywhere in the world, you bring in a deeply unjust law, people are going to object to it. They're going to be very angry. If you put Gardaí in that situation, you're at fault. You're the people who put them in that position.
35,000 water meters have been installed in the north, There's not this kind of thing.
Oh, come
and Sinn Féin is at the end
of
the
I mean, you're walking
Sinn
Féin, into a wall on that
one.
I'm not. I mean, Conor Murphy, actually prevented water charges being brought in the north every year because of the technical procedures up there has to be voted upon.
I think it's not fair.
There's no water charges.
Do you know what? I'm going to stop you here. We're not getting into water meters again.
Sinn Féin are not protesting about that there, and they wouldn't condone this type of behaviour.
We have your point.
There's no charges in the north.
Look, we're really running short on time. We want to get on to our final story for the evening, is the conditions that asylum seekers are living in here. Pádraig, you were in Mosny today. Now, you are chair of the Oireachtas Committee who are charged with looking into this issue. Tell us first, what exactly, there's a huge amount of criticism that we've heard in recent months about the way in which asylum seekers are being kept here. What did you see?
Well, in recent weeks, we visited...
Her aunt Josie came to visit without warning on a Saturday in late January. Nora had the fire lighting in the back room and the boys were there, engrossed in a television programme, while she was in the kitchen washing up dishes. "I was down in the town, Nora," Josie said as soon as she opened the door, "and John dropped me up. He has business now to attend to, but he'll collect me later, and I wanted to see how you were. Are the boys here?" "They're watching television, Josie." "Are they well?" Donal and Connor did not take their eyes from the television set. "Oh, when they were staying with me, they were great readers, the two of them. We kept the television for the news, none of those rotten American programmes," Josie said. "You wouldn't know what they'd be saying on those American programmes." When Donald turned to speak, Nora noticed that his stammer seemed more pronounced. He was not able to get the first word out. She hadn't seen him having to make such an effort before and then failing, stammering before he even spoke. His younger brother, she saw, was moving one of his arms towards him as though to offer Donal some assistance.
Yeah, that was Emile Ford and the Checkmates, especially for Liam. Liam Byrne in Navan. He was on last night, wondering if I could find that. And also, much more, Born to Be With You, especially for Marie in Tipperary, who held her little baby, her second daughter, for the first time, 1965. And that pops up on the radio, Born to Be With You. Well, good to have you on board. Harry in Colin, County Louth. Hiya, Harry. What about For Old Time's Sake from Dickie Rock? Oh, he's getting into that kind of a mood now, I see. Yeah, and Phil in Navan reminds me, Gene Vincent was born this day, 35, Jerry Goffin in 39, and Bacharach and David had their first number one. Hey, plenty of ideas for music suggestions between now and 2 o'clock. You're on a late date. It's 5 to midnight. So let's go to Met Éireann for the general and sea area forecast. Here's Dr. Clara Finkele.
Thank you and good evening from Mid Éireann. Tonight will be mostly dry but cloudy and misty with patches of...